Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with bonkers.ie, Ireland's favourite comparison and switching website. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number, and Joe at RT.ie. Dr. Aidan Hampson. Aidan, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Joe.
Good, you spotted something. Go ahead, Aidan.
Well, look, before I start, listen, I feel embarrassed about being on at the moment, but I have a feel that this, what I'm going to deal with now appears minor amongst the horrific and the sad stories you deal with on a daily basis, but I just feel I owe this to this man. Basically, if you cast your mind back to 1975, Michael Reynolds was a guard. He was a 30-year-old guard who was born just outside Ballinasloe in Galway.
Okay.
And he was stationed in Clontarf Garda Station.
Mm-hmm.
He was married to Vera, and he had a 2-year-old daughter called Emer.
Right.
On the 11th of September 1975, four official IRA members raided the bank in Clester and stole £7,000.
Okay.
As they were getting away, they nearly crashed into Michael's car. He was off duty at the time, and he was driving with his wife and his daughter. Mm-hmm. Mistakenly, he thought it was a stolen car, so he gave chase.
Right.
And he chased them as far through Clester, through Clontarf, until he ended up in St. Anne's Park. They got out of the car, they fled on foot, and Michael got out of his car and he chased them. Now, he caught one of them and he tackled them to the ground and he held them there. And one of the other IRA members came back and threatened to shoot him if he didn't let go. Michael didn't let go and he was shot in the head and he died 2 hours later. Now, I can only imagine the fear and the anguish of his poor wife sitting in her car waiting for her husband to come back, a man who would never come back.
Right.
In July 1976, he was posthumously awarded the Scott Medal.
Okay.
This is the the biggest award you can give to a Garda for bravery. His wife received that.
Yeah.
And ironically, two of the people who were convicted of his murder were sentenced to death. In those days, it was still a death sentence to kill a Garda. This was commuted to life. Several years later, a plaque in his memory was erected down in Clontarf Garda Station.
And I remember seeing it,
hung there very proudly in the public office. And many a time I would go down there and I would admire the simple commemoration. And, you know, people would admire it and remember this brave man. And it was like one lest you forget moment. Now, that was great until about 6-7 years ago when there was a refurbishment, a large refurbishment done in the Garda Station. And the memorial plaque disappeared. I said, that's grand, they'll return it when everything settled down. But several months later, I went down, it hasn't been returned. So I made inquiries and I was told that it now resides either in a back office or in a hallway in an area which is assessed only by the staff, where no public people can see it. And I felt this was totally wrong. So I decided to go on a mission here.
Okay.
And I contacted, first of all, the GRA, Garda Representative Association, and then I wrote several letters to the most senior guard in the area at the time. And to be honest with you, Joe, I felt I was beating my head against a stone wall. Nothing happened. The excuses I was given, I was absolutely disgusted. Now, there's two questions here. Why am I doing this? And two, what do I hope to gain from it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you remember, I was on to you several years ago. I'm the proud father of a young guard.
Okay.
And God forbid, if this was happened to one of my own and a commemoration plaque was pasted in the back office, I'd be absolutely very angry and very disgusted.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel somebody has to speak up for the family here. And so basically, what in my research,
okay.
I discovered that, I don't know if you realise this, but up in Dublin Castle there is a museum to the Gardaí.
Yeah, I know it well, yeah.
And in there is a commemoration, a roll of honour.
Mm-hmm.
And in the museum, the Roll of Honour commemorates the Gardaí who were killed in the service of the country between 1922 and 1940.
Mm-hmm.
But in the Great Castle Gardens, there are three memorial gardens.
Yeah.
One of them is for Veronica Guerin.
Yeah.
The second one is for the Special Olympics, which is held there in 2003. Mm-hmm. And there are 30,000 signatures of the participants engraved there. Mm-hmm. And the largest of the gardens is for the Gardaí who have fallen. Now, if you wouldn't mind, I quickly read a little paragraph I obtained from this.
Okay.
The garden was redesigned in 2009. Mm-hmm. In the garden, there is a roll of honour inserted with all the names of the Gardaí killed in the line of duty. Several sculptural works are also incorporated in the layout. These works and the overall design of the garden are intended to reflect how the premature deaths of the loved ones leave a trace or an imprint, like ripples in a pool, on the lives of those left behind. If you look at that plaque, there are 81 names inscribed on it, right. The last one being Tony Golden.
Yeah, of course.
And he was the 81st one to die. Michael Reynolds was the 42nd guard to be killed in the line of duty. Now, I just feel that I owe it not only to his family, and unfortunately his daughter died. His daughter died when she was 24.
Oh my God.
I'm not too sure about Vera, his wife, but I owe it to his family, and I owe it to every parent of every guard in this country to try and get this plaque restored to its rightful place. That's out in the office, where people can see it. Remember, this brave young man not only gave his life for his uniform, but also for his country. And it's a shame that it's hidden away there.
And remember, he was unarmed, chasing people who were obviously armed. And when he gave chase with some energy and courage, and he chased them and he followed them into St. Anne's Park, as you mentioned, and he had one of them caught, and the other person
shot him
in the head.
And he died within 2 hours.
Oh, God.
No, I'm hoping by being on to you, hopefully common sense will prevail here, and some senior guard might hear this. Now, I will check this out in a few weeks' time, and if it's not restored, I will have to go to a higher God than you, Joe, to try and go forward with this, because I owe it to these people.
I'm just looking at the list here when you contact us, Aidan. Up to 1970, when the Troubles began, there was a guard, there was a whole, and I don't have time to mention, but I will put it up on Twitter for people, in fairness, in respect to those men who died, and they're all men, that up to then, for example, up to the 26th of January 1970, the previous 10 Gardaí, but going back to 1952, 10 Gardaí, they were all accidentally killed in a road traffic collision, accidentally killed in a and knocked down by a vet. They were all accidents. Now, that doesn't diminish the grief for the family. But once we hit the Troubles in Northern Ireland, we begin then in 1970 with the April, that's with the murder of Garda Richard Fallon, which I think is engraved on all our memories. Then there's other Gardaí, again killed, Seamus Donegan killed by the Provisional IRA in an improvised explosive device. There's a number of other accidents. Then we have Michael Reynolds in 11 September 75. Then we have Michael Clerken, again, the people remember him, killed entering a booby trap premises in Portlaoise. Then we John Morley and Henry Bourne. You remember that awful robbery in Ballyhadrine. But so in one sense, if you look at the deaths of Gardaí because of the Troubles, so to speak, because of fundraising as they were doing, and the number is relatively small. Now, as I mentioned, that Dr. Finian Fallon is on the line, 51551 joe@rt.ie. And Finian is the son of that Garda I just mentioned, Garda Richard Fallon, or Dick Fallon, as he was known, I think, to his friends.
Well, Joe, amazingly, his daughter was a patient of mine years ago.
Okay, small so word.
It's a small word.
Small word, okay. Finian, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Now, it will be 50 years in April, won't it, that your father was murdered. Do you want to, if you can, Finian, remind people what happened to him?
Yeah, I was just listening very poignantly to the story. I thought it was very poignant to hear about the Garda Reynolds story. My father was on his way home from work one evening in April 1970 when there was an alarm call was received, and he, rather than going home, he decided to go with his colleagues down to a bank robbery that was going on in Aran Cee.
When he got Dublin, down there, the Dublin city centre.
Aran Cee in Dublin. The bank, the robbery was still ongoing as he arrived, and himself and his colleagues jumped out of the car, and my father tried to capture one of the robbers, and he did so, and the robber turned around and he was shot twice from, I think, two different bullets, and he was unfortunately dead before he hit the ground.
Oh, God. In the laneway. That was in the laneway, which is still
there.
Right,
yeah.
It's still there. And is there a plaque there, Finian?
No, it's a strange story. From my perspective, obviously, I was only about three or four when it happened. Mm. And over the years, I think there were some attempts made to ask the bank that occupied the location at the time to put up a plaque, but they declined. But thankfully, seeing as next year is the 50th anniversary, some friends of mine have approached Dublin Corporation or Dublin City Council to see if they will erect a plaque there. We haven't heard back yet as to what they what they're going to do. And to be in fairness to the GRA, they've offered also to make representations on behalf of the family. I'll certainly ask them about the guardrail situation the next time.
So the fallen family would like some memorial. Is it specifically at the location, Finian, or a different?
Specifically at the location.
Okay.
Again, I wouldn't say, you know, I wouldn't sort of expect this for any other family in terms of, you know, advising them or expecting them to expect the same thing. But certainly we would like to have some sort of commemoration
now,
at the location.
Where your father was shot there near the church on Aran Quay, where Eamon de Valera was buried, near the church where I think Michael Collins was, his removal was in 1922. It is a very public spot. Like, I'm sure you've passed, I passed it 10 times in the last fortnight. You just go up and down the quays. I presume you pass it often, do you?
Oftentimes, yeah. And I've gone in for a few meetings around the area and stuff. It's always a very poignant trip to be wandering around the area. You can still see the bullet holes in some of the columns in the bank and that kind of thing, you know.
And what, Finian, what do you think of the argument? Well, the past is the past. Don't be dragging it up. And this is only hurting the family more. And
yeah, well, certainly, you know, as a member of the family, I think it would be nice. I'm proud of my father's achievements. And I think it would be nice to have an appropriate commemoration for him and all the other Gardaí who served and who put their lives on the line every day.
Would you, it's April. No, that's only 5 months. January, 6 months. Do the family, and it shouldn't be up to you, but do the family intend holding 50th anniversary memorial on the spot, or laying of a wreath or something?
Maybe, perhaps a laying of the wreath. I'm sure we're fairly low-key about these things, I suppose, as a family, but it might be something we'd consider. But certainly, there's no point in laying something there if there isn't a plaque to commemorate it as such. I suppose it'd be nice, a nice gesture on behalf of the council and perhaps the state to put something up in his memory.
And I know all Gardaí are remembered fondly by their families, but I think a lot of people remember your father because it was the first murder with guns. It wasn't an accidental traffic road where somebody shot someone dead. They knew what they were doing when they fired into your father's body, and that's why it shocked. And it was the first murder of Irish.
The Troubles,
during the Troubles.
Of a police, Irish policeman, yeah.
And that is 50 years, as we know, this year, and now 50 years, your father's anniversary. Finian, do you remember anything? Because I remember it vaguely, but it was a massive event in the country.
Yeah,
there was nothing.
I think,
like, the size of it was incredible.
Absolutely, yeah. And it was a huge shock to the nation, I think, at the time. Over 1,000 of his colleagues sort of turned out in uniform without orders as such to attend the funeral. And that was, you know, there was only about 7,000 police in the state at the time. So it was a massive funeral. People lined sort of O'Connell Street, etc., and people were sort of handing donations to policemen, doing point duty on various corners and various streets over the weeks and months that followed. So, as I say, it was a very shocking event in the country at the time, I think.
And Dr. Aidan Hampson there mentioned he came across, and he said he came across some of your family as well, but we don't know if there's any surviving members directly of Michael Rennan's family. Unfortunately, his daughter seemed to have died quite young. What about your own family, Finian? Had you siblings or your mother?
There were five
your mother
children.
Was obviously very young.
Yeah, she was very young indeed. She was only in her 30s, I think, at the time. She died young in 1994 at age 56.
Wow.
I think, as one of my brothers said, she died of a broken heart. I don't think she ever recovered from the funeral. And two of my brothers have also died young, I'd say, directly or partly at least as a result of the trauma they experienced as well.
Two of your brothers have died?
Yeah, they died in their early 40s, unfortunately, yeah.
I'm sorry to hear that. And who's surviving of Richard?
Yeah, there's myself and my sister Miriam, who lives in South Africa, and my brother Richard, who also lives in Ireland.
Okay. Aidan, somebody has just told me that has been inside for whatever reason, inside, behind the public counter. And just to remind people, the public counter in Clontarf Garda, they're a great crew. They really are the men and women, and they don't design these public counters. But the public counter is, you cannot see anything through it until the hatch opens. But they say, somebody who's seen it recently, the plaque to our to Garda Michael Reynolds is at the bottom of the stairs in Clontarf Garda station. It is polished every single day by members of staff, but that caller agrees with you, Aidan. It should be on public display. So,
Joe, wasn't it lovely that you were able to talk to a member of a son of a guard who would be so proud to have a memorial erected to his father,
Finian Fallon? Yeah,
I think it's such a simple thing to do. Nobody can see that plaque in the back office.
Yeah, here.
They're polishing it every day for who to look at. Put it back out. It's a simple thing, Joe. I can't understand why they can't put it back in the place where it was meant to be. So we can all, in generations to come, look up at this and remember the man and remember the bravery. You know, it's so simple. I just can't understand the lack of common sense here.
And he died in public service. And I also think the front, it's almost a tangential point that the front of Clontarf Garda station is a lovely bit of grass, but it's completely obscured by an awful wall. There's no need for the wall. Take the wall down and make a beautiful garden there, including a memorial to Garda Reynolds and indeed other Gardaí as well that may have died in different circumstances in that particular area. Finian, have you, when you say memorial, are you just thinking of a plaque with your father's name, maybe his age and the date he was more?
Yeah, something very simple and understated, but certainly I think it would be appropriate at this stage.
Who owns the building now?
Ironically, it's called an organisation called, I think it's called New Nation, which I think is somewhat ironic in the circumstances. But
New Nation?
Yeah.
Okay, because I know the building beside it, I knew well, was the Catholic Youth Council offices, and I'm sure. But anyway, Phil Fagan, good afternoon. Phil, 51551 text. Phil, good afternoon. What age were you in 1970?
I was 20, Joe, and I was just learning to drive. And at that time, the O'Connor Bridge School of Motoring was probably one of the very few in Dublin.
Yeah.
And I was having a driving lesson down along the quays because they were based there beside what was McBurney's. And I was having a driving lesson down the quays. Now, Joe, I can't put a time of day on it, but I know it was evening. You know what I mean? It wasn't
afternoon.
You know, it wasn't morning. Yeah. And all of a sudden, I mean, the traffic was probably two-way on the quays that time, Joe. Quite a long time ago.
I remember the
shock. And then it filtered through because the traffic was obviously held up and everything. And the shock that people felt. It was like the day that you heard about President Kennedy. It was almost as, do you know what I mean? It was almost as significant as that.
And when you were in the city centre, did you notice any of the panic? Because it was a major investigation,
you
can imagine. Yeah.
Because we were in the traffic driving along, I was with the driving instructor, and we were stopped. We had to abandon the lesson, so to speak. And at first we didn't know what it was, but then when it filtered through that a Garda had been shot, it was absolutely shocking.
And it's worth trying to give people a glimpse of how shocking it was, because it was so unusual for a Garda to be murdered in cold blood.
Dreadful. And I, at that point, was a young, I was 20, I was very young married. And the grief then you felt when you realised that this man had a young wife and he had children, you had great empathy with that. And, you know, it stuck with me for quite a while. And even now, to this day, if I drive up the quays, you know, coming up from Euston Station or something, I never pass by there without thinking about him.
Okay. And Phil, were you aware, as we come to the 50th anniversary of the murder of Richard Fallon, that there's no memorial, no plaque to say what happened there at such an important point in the history of the state?
The last time I walked up by there, which was about a year ago, I dropped somebody down, went by bus into the station. I was walking back up the quays. And I stood at the spot and just thought, my God, how things changed since then, how everybody was so shocked at that murder.
Yeah, yeah.
But it didn't occur to me that there wasn't anything. And, you know, there should be, Joe. There should be.
Yeah, well, that's, well, the family would like it. Finian is yeah. adamant. Finian, when Phil mentioned, I have a vague, now again, memory of your mother at the funeral, and there would have been young children there. Were you all brought to the funeral? Do you remember to the graveyard?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I remember it vividly on the day, walking up there. My mother was offered to bury him in Glasnevin, but she declined. She didn't want to make a sectarian issue out of the whole affair, but he was buried in Balgriffin Cemetery. I remember vividly walking up the stone pathway up to the graveside, and all the black coats around me looking up, and sort of the milling around the graveside then, and the service, and almost sort of falling into the grave myself. I had to be pulled back. There was such a mill around the grave itself that we've all been pushed forward. So my brother Richard had to pull me out. I don't know if he regrets that, but he did nonetheless.
But Finian, can you remember, like, what was your understanding of what had happened to your dad?
Yeah, I think it was only in later years that I kind of began to appreciate or understand, you know, the stories and the lore around it, and the accusations flew about who was responsible and whether or not the gun that killed him was paid for by the state. Those kind of accusations flew around the family for years later.
Because the story at the time was that Sarah era, which were kind of a breakaway group, that they had carried out the... Was there anyone ever convicted for the murder of your father?
No, there were two men tried and sort of acquitted of it. But no one was ever found.
And why do you say, where is this theory that somehow the gun might have been bought or paid for by taxpayers?
Yeah, I was interested. Phil was talking about there that sort of the chaos in the city at the time. There was a cordon put around the city at the time, and there was allegations made in the Doyle that elements within the government had helped the gang escape from the city and escape overseas. So those allegations and the controversy surrounding it had kind of lived on to this day. It hasn't been fully addressed as far as I and the family are concerned.
And what about the funding? What about the funding of the gun?
Yeah, well, we know the Irish state was funding arms and material being smuggled into Dublin.
The arms trial,
exactly, and it was my father's death took place in April of 1970. The arms trial began in May 1970. A former commissioner of the Irish Police said my father's death was the beginning of the end in relation to the arms importation. So I don't think if he hadn't been murdered, I think the importations may have continued without any slowdown.
That's an interesting point, because if we go back to 69-70 and the outbreak of the Troubles in Northern Ireland and the burning out of Catholic homes and the attacks on Catholics and the attacks in Derry, which were in Derry by the security forces, the B Specials as they were known at that time, so-called legal security force, and then in Belfast the sectarian attacks primarily, but aided and abetted by the RUC and the B Specials on Catholic homes, there was a very strong feeling in the south of support for, and then we have a Garda murdered, and obviously at the same time we now know that they were trying to, there was assistance of some government departments and individuals to bring in arms to give to the Catholic population in Northern Ireland, and I know there's another book coming out on the arms trial very soon. It's the definitive piece, I'm told, but Your theory is that when Garda Fallon was shot, an unarmed Garda was shot in the middle of Dublin, going about his duty, that kind of sent a shudder through the state, and anyone that was saying, hang on a minute, we have to send more guns into the inferno was stopped in their tracks, literally, because we know somebody let the cat out of the bag and the shipment was stopped at Dublin Airport and everything.
That's right,
everything
around the same time,
Okay. Well, God rest your dad anyway, Finian. And Aidan, thank you for bringing that. You said your own son is in the guards, Aidan. Has he ever suffered or been attacked?
No, thankfully. Well, okay. We just things we don't hear about. He keeps things to himself.
Okay. Stay with us both if you can. 51551 Joe at rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at rte.ie. And I've put on my Twitter account at Joe Liveline that page from Wikipedia of the number of Gardaí who've died in the line of duty or in the course of their duty, I suppose is the best way to describe it. And it goes back as far as obviously when the Gardaí were formed, the first Guard killed was Charles Eastwood on the 20th September 1922. That was in the Ship Street barracks there at the back of Dublin Castle, and he was accidentally shot by a colleague. Then there was Henry Phelan, aged 21, by the way. Charles Eastwood was 19. November 22, murdered in a sports shop by armed anti-treaty IRA intruders. That was in Mullinahone, County Tipperary. I just wonder how many memorials there are. Michael Clancy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Which murder are you recalling? The killing of Richard Fallon, Dick
yes,
Fallon,
indeed.
Garda Fallon.
A group from Sligo was up at the boxing, the National Boxing Stadium. There was a tournament on in April. And we were on a break and we were crossing the bridge there. And John Conlon, our trainer at the time, was an ex-army man. And he heard what we thought was the backfire of a car, but he recognises the shot.
Okay.
So we ran across the bridge and we came up the quay there and we came into the side of the bank and we seen Garda Richard Fallon lying there.
Oh, God.
It was a gruesome sight. I was only 15 at the time, so it was shocking. And I've never seen somebody shot before in my life, and maybe on air it mightn't be right to describe, but it was gruesome in the day.
I just like to remember
him. Yeah. We were on the scene before anybody, the ambulance or guards or otherwise. And
Michael, was there anyone ministering first aid or indeed
pastoral? No, at that stage nobody had come. Yeah. We had arrived, we were crossing and we had come up the quays when we heard the shots. And John ran up and we ran after him, our trainer, because he recognised the shot. We only thought it was a car. And we just ran in, there was big iron gates outside. There he was lying. And it was a horrific sight.
And that was before even the Gardaí had arrived or any other Gardaí?
There was nobody there, no other guard, only Garda Richard Fallon lying on the ground. And what a gunshot wound there was. Quite gruesome, to be honest.
And Michael, I presume, had the raiders gone at that stage, or was there any sighting?
It was at the side of the bank, inside the railings.
Okay.
No, there was no raiders there. When we ran
out through the back of the bank, didn't they?
Yeah, they went out
the side lane. The side
lane. Passageway at the side of the bank.
And they made their escape.
Yeah. Nearly 50 years ago, yeah.
Finian, sorry, I should have warned you that I didn't know Richard was got.
I don't wish to upset anyone.
I know, and you said that you're very good.
Above anything, that I wouldn't. But yeah. I just, when I was listening to you there, Joe, I can't believe it's 50 years now.
Yeah, it is. And, 50 years next
it's
April.
Still there vividly in my memory.
And it's not for me to ask you, Michael, but the family would like some memorial on that spot which you remember so vividly.
Yeah.
I presume.
On the corner of the bank where he was just lying out from the corner of the building would be an appropriate thing, or wherever the family
know. They'd like it on the spot.
I'm only recalling what I seen on the day, and as I say, I was only 15 and it was
And Finian, you mentioned earlier that what was the family told that your father had died instantly? You said he had died before he hit the ground.
Yeah, and I think that was one of the findings in the inquest that happened afterwards.
Yeah. Okay. Michael, okay. Apparently we've made, Aidan, I think we've established some contact with the family of Garda Reynolds, and we are hoping to speak to somebody in a couple of minutes.
Here we go.
He's there. Is he George Langan? George, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
How are you, George?
That's about.
What is your connection to?
I just got in there. I got a text message. I didn't know this topic was going on at all today.
Okay.
So I got a topic because I'm married to Vera Reynolds, Mick Reynolds' widow.
Oh, God. And how long are you married, George?
Married in 1980, she better not hear me.
Okay.
84.
Okay. And Vera was there. And how is Vera now, George?
Oh, she's not too well. She had got a couple of strokes.
I'm sorry to hear
that. A few years ago.
Yeah. And
but she's not too bad. She wouldn't be able to talk on air now or anything.
Okay. And George, Vera wrote about what happened on that day because she was there.
Well, she dictated it all to me and I wrote it.
Okay.
You know, the Force magazine, I'm retired. I was in the Force as well.
Okay.
So I'm retired. So I wrote it all in the Force magazine. It's the Chicane. It's called the Chicane. You might have heard of
right,
it.
Right, of course I have, yeah.
And so I wrote it on 4 installments on the 40th anniversary of McGrinnell of the Debt.
Yeah.
He died in 75, so it was 2015.
And did you know Mick?
I just knew him to see.
Yeah, okay.
From going into the juvenile court back in the early 70s.
And what was it like for Vera, through yourself, George, to write about what happened that awful day?
Oh, she had the greatest memory. I remember guests coming here and different people,
okay.
And they would say, if they couldn't think of something, go over and ask Vera Reynolds. She knows. She had the greatest memory of all time.
Wow.
And she was able to dictate to me everything that happened from the day it all started to the finish.
Jenny Mac. I'm sure a lot of people would like to reread that article.
Well, there's some of it there online.
Good.
You can get it online if you look it up.
Okay.
I don't know how the old installments are, but they're the first 2 installments that I wrote there anyway. I didn't look at the rest of them.
And the heading sounds like a book.
Well, it was Death Flows the Nannikin was the heading ahead.
And the Nannikin is that river that runs through St. Anne's Park.
That's the stream that runs down St. Anne's Park.
Yeah,
it flowed red that day.
Yeah, flowed red with mixed blood, unfortunately.
September 1975.
Yeah. And then 2 people were sentenced to life. Well, they were sentenced to death initially because it was capital punishment for the murder of a guard in the line of duty. Their names will come back to me, but
The two Murrays.
The Murrays, they were husband and wife? Or?
Husband and wife, yeah.
Okay, and they lived, did they not live in Raheny somewhere?
They did down there in... And as we go down to St. Joseph's Hospital,
that road there. And have they long been released? We don't know. Are they alive or dead? Insofar as...
Alive. They're released. I think... I remember it was back in the 90s. They were released. I know that they get... Was it 17 years or not?
Marion Noel Reynolds.
That's it.
Murray, sorry, my mistake. Now I'm getting completely mixed up. And... So you reckon they're still alive? Did Vera?
Oh, they were alive. They were alive there last year because I know where they live. They might know that I know where they live, but I do.
How did you find out where they live, George?
Oh, people would
tell you. Okay.
With conversations with people.
And what are they retired now? And
they were working in they had a shop in some part of the country.
Okay.
One stage.
And did they ever express any remorse for shooting?
Never came near the place.
Shooting an unarmed guard.
Never saw anyone.
An unarmed.
And the day that they were released, a reporter came to the door here, and Vera opened the door, and the reporter says, "What do you think, Mrs. Reynolds or Mrs. Langan?" I think she says, "No, the Murrays are released." That was the first she heard of it.
Yeah.
There was no communication from the guard of Chicane, from the press office, that they were being released or nothing. But she was quick enough. She says, "Oh, I know that. That's okay. I don't want to speak about it." She says,
"Yeah." And how did Vera fare immediately afterwards?
She had one daughter, Emer.
Yeah.
And Emer had cystic fibrosis.
Ah.
So she was the whole time. Her hands were full.
And what?
Over and back to Crumlin Hospital, and then to Beaumont. But sadly, she died in 1998 at the age of 24.
So that would have been, 13 years after her father was murdered?
Yeah.
Yeah.
1998.
I was thinking of 88. So that would have been, So for nearly 3 decades, and of course Vera, like so many mothers, would never do anything differently. She, on her own, was looking after a child with cystic fibrosis, which you cover so often on this.
She looked after the child the whole time. She was the state, the chief witness for the state at that time, for the court case. She was in the car when it all happened. She saw them coming out of the bank, going into the car, and she was in the chase and all with Mick. Mick wouldn't stop. He was following them, and she says, "Don't follow them, Mick. They might have guns." And he said, "I don't care. I'm going after them." And they turned into St. Anne's Park. That time in St. Anne's Park, there was no gates, if you remember, Joe. There was only chains.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
And the chains were down beforehand.
Right.
The, they had all that ready. And the chase went down along the main
the main avenue, as it's called, yeah.
And then the turn left in at the tower, because the tower had
been under. I know, well, yeah.
They cut across, it was raining, and the mixed wipe and the cars were going, and they actually, he caught up with him, but they cut across him and blocked him off.
Right.
So they jumped out of the car, and he ran out of the car as well, and let Vera, and Amber was in the car as well. The daughter.
Good God.
And he ran in after them. And he passed one that wasn't able to keep up. And I think two of them had gone up over the bank. And he caught the last one by the legs and pulled him back in. But a voice came out then. Let go of my husband.
Right.
Because Mick wouldn't let go. And next thing, he was shot through the back of the head with a 45 caliber Smith & Wesson, I think. Yeah. Or Webley and Scott, I'm not sure now.
And
I was trained in both of them.
And George, do they believe, or does Vera believe that it was Mary?
She admitted it.
That she
in cross examination.
The Mary Murray shot.
She admitted it in Hacker Terrace under cross examination.
That she shot him in the head from the back.
That's what came out anyway.
Yeah. And did Vera get, has she got, she's still alive, thank God, has she got much help from the state?
There was compensation at that time, but it wasn't very much back then, yeah. In 1975, with the murder of a Garda. But, the Garda were very helpful to her, from Clontarf and around, that was called to the house and all. But before, while they were waiting for the court case, as she was the chief witnesses, there was rocks thrown through the door. She was on the phone one evening, she was going to go back to Bat Amber, and she went upstairs or something.
Mm-hmm.
And on her way down, a rock of coal came through the glass porch.
Nice.
It was a terrible intimidation. She was getting phone calls that there was bombs in the house. She was getting everything.
Good God. And what organisation were Mary and Noel Murray members, or did they profess to be members of?
I think they were anarchists. They were a breakaway.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But as I remember now.
And you'd remember, George, if you were a serving guard at the time, you'd remember the murder of Garda Dick Fallon as well, wouldn't you?
That was before, I hadn't joined that time. That
you hadn't joined, 70,
was that 1970?
Right.
Yeah,
1970, 50th anniversary next
year. Yeah. So... that was the story about the whole lot anyway. And,
I don't want to be, in terms of even people who witnessed Garda Fallon's body the seconds after he was murdered, Michael explained it very well, and Finian was appreciative of that, his son. But would Vera be aware that the plaque, and I think it's the only memorial to Garda, apart from the one where in Dublin Castle for all Gardaí, the only memorial near where he was shot, or near where he was murdered. He wasn't shot, he was murdered. Was Vera aware that it had been moved from a public display into a private area in the Garda station Clontarf where people can't see it?
No, she wasn't aware of it because I asked her now before I came on air.
Okay.
And she says that when she was brought down to Clontarf, the plaque was in where it is now because I sat there myself.
Where it was in the public area.
Yeah, she'd have remembered that if it was outside, but maybe it was outside, but she was never told.
And is she aware that it has been moved inside? It's out.
Oh, yeah, she were down there years ago.
I know she, because I think her name is on it, actually. The plaque was in the public area where the public go. The plaque is now gone.
Is down, if you go in the door and if you go down the corridor, I think it's at the bottom of the stairs.
Yeah, but...
it cannot be seen from the public office.
Okay, would Vera like it to be seen in the public office?
Oh, she would, of course.
Yeah, okay. Okay, well, maybe now we've had communication from somebody who's been in and out of the private part of that Garda station to say that they polish it that they treat it with great reverence.
Yeah.
And they polish it every single day and people stop as they pass by.
But the fact that nobody can see it, I suppose.
Yeah, okay.
It would be something to have outside, all right.
Right. And can I ask, George... did Vera have other children subsequently?
No, that's the only one we had.
Only one. And our Emer died of cystic fibrosis, God.
Yeah, that was a sore lifetime.
Yeah.
And it was a sad day because she was in the car when it all happened. Yeah. And she had the shots and all ring out.
And Vera wasn't a guard. Sure, she wasn't. You're saying her, which it sounds fantastic, that her memory was absolutely brilliant, and people came to her years later. Do you remember this person and that person? So, she sounds like an extraordinarily smart woman.
I don't know how she stayed so strong for the whole lot of it, and all through the years with what she had, with the burden she had, and with the aim with cystic fibrosis.
Yeah, of course.
How she hadn't got a stroke years and years ago.
And do you know if Garda Reynolds' family, in terms of parents, because he was only 30 when he was murdered.
His father and mother, they were alive when it happened.
Yeah, they're in, is it Ballinasloe?
Donnie Kilconnor, his father.
In Ballinasloe, yeah. Okay.
His father didn't know about it. Only he had it in the 6:30 news that time. They didn't even know, but they went out that there was a guard they shot in Dublin, but they didn't know, and he was listening to the 6:30 news.
And he didn't.
And he came out on the news, and Vera was there, and she did TV, but for some reason she didn't turn on the television, and she was out in the kitchen, and she was feeding Neymar, and the 6:30 news was on, and they broke halfway through the news, we're breaking this to say that Garda Reynolds has now died. Yeah. And his brother was here in the house with Vera, John Reynolds. He's dead since as well. And Vera said, "Did you hear that, John? What? Mickey's dead." There was no other communication running through the national airwaves.
Good God.
I thought that was an awful breakdown, like for the press office. The press office. Someone should have.
Even when Mary and Noel Murray, the people who were sentenced to death.
She was never told they were being released or anything.
Yeah. Has she bumped into them or seen them since?
Was that Joe?
Has Vera seen them? I know you say you know where they live and...
No, I've seen them.
You've never seen them? Oh, okay.
I've never seen them, but only people who have seen them know where they are.
Okay. Well, George, please pass on our kind regards to Vera and yourself for contacting us as well. And there's an outpouring of sympathy still for that awful. On the one hand, the courage of Mick, as you call him, and Vera, by the way, in the car as well, chasing a Neymar at the back, chasing this gang when they were off duty and unarmed. Worth saying, as Dick Fallon was unarmed, and to be murdered in cold blood like that. Okay, George. Kind regards to Vera and to yourself.
Thanks, Joe, and
all the members of the force for the service.
Yeah. Thank you,
Paddy. Thanks, George. That's George Langan, who's married to Vera Reynolds, who's the widow of Garda Mick Reynolds. And as George said, Vera would like the plaque to be put on public display rather than in a private location in Clontarf Garda Station, the only plaque specifically to her husband who was murdered nearby in St. Anne's Park. Now, Paddy Daly. Paddy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You remember the death of Garda Dick Fallon?
Yeah, I worked with Dick in Mountjoy Garda Station. I was there actually.
Oh, that's where he was, okay.
Yeah, the morning that Dick was shot.
And now, go ahead.
The unusual thing about that, there is we had a meeting. We have a meeting every month about retired members, and we had one the Skyline this morning, and we discussed the plaque.
Brilliant!
A plaque, and there's the drawing to have a plaque, but that was the Royal Ulster Bank that was in Arran Quay that time. But the morning actually that this incident occurred. Now there was Paul Fairt on the car, and there was Pat Hunter. Now Paul has since passed away, but Pat Hunter is still alive. And that morning, the car was in the yard, and Dick, it was the famous Conway Commission looking for better conditions in the guards.
Right.
And it would have been the first time that we actually got a long weekend off. And Dick was from Roscommon, and he had a Volkswagen, blue Volkswagen van, and he was going to bring the kids down to Roscommon that weekend. That would have been the first long weekend he'd have off.
Right.
And he got into the car, and he said, "Would you drop me down towards North King Street?" And on the way down, the alarm was out. There was a bank alarm. At that time, it was unheard of, really, for a bank robbery, a guard to be shot.
Okay,
and
he
could have dropped them off at North King Street because he passed by. And he said, "Oh, fuck, we do the alarm first, drop me on the way back." And unfortunately, that's what happened.
And
so Dick was a big, strong, fearless man.
Was he?
Yeah.
And was Dick in uniform?
In uniform, yes.
I was in uniform. So these Sarah era people, they knew who they were shooting dead.
It was a Garda squad, Chad. Three guards were in uniform.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Guards. Yeah. I now understand.
And they were all in uniform. And we at that time, I was a pallbearer at the funeral, and there was thousands. We marched down O'Connell Street, Westmoreland Street, out to Balgriffin. But also, later on, we had the Dick Fallon Memorial Cup for years. We played between the Bridewell and Mountjoy in Dalymount Park,
okay,
which went on for years. But the children, Dick's children like Finian, were all very young that time.
It was
a major occurrence to happen. Now, there is a plaque in Mountjoy, on the wall in Mountjoy, gold plaque, and there's also a very large photograph of, I was a pallbearer at the funeral, there's a very large photograph on the wall of the funeral going up O'Connell Street, and thousands of people lining the streets.
It was like a state funeral, wasn't it?
It was the nearest to a state funeral you'll ever see.
And Paddy, what was the view of the meeting this morning from the retired Gardaí from that great station, Mountjoy, of the idea of a plaque on the spot, which is what the family would like for the 50th anniversary?
It's funny, I didn't think this was going to be on Joe Duffy, but we had a meeting, irrespective of yours, and this was discussed. And they're going to go ahead and meet the various bodies have a plaque for the 50th anniversary.
So the retired Gardaí would like a plaque as well?
Plaque down at the bank.
At the bank, okay. Well, that's interesting. By the way, I see somebody texting me there. Paul, Garda Paul Firth. How is he doing? Someone is asking
Pat,
me.
Hold on now. Pat Hunter was the driver of the car, okay?
Okay, yeah.
Now, Pat is alive, lives in Glasclevin near me.
Right, okay.
Paul Firth, unfortunately, has passed away.
All right.
And there was three in the car, and Dick is the other one.
Yeah.
Now, I would have worked for Dick for years because of Paul Ray, but Dick was a lovely man, gentleman, and a big, strong, fearless man. And everyone would say it's the very thing that Dick would do, you know?
Yeah.
But like everything, if you look back on things that happened, that would have been the first long weekend that Dick was going to bring the kids down the country.
Okay. Did you, who's Dick's son, Finian, you were very young, but would you have been subsequently told your dad he was going to take us away that weekend, or the plans that he had?
I think that Volkswagen minibus, we travelled to every county in the country over the years. It wouldn't have been unusual. I can still remember the smell of the interior of a Volkswagen. I don't know if you're familiar with that, Joe,
Diesel fumes or petrol fumes.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
But I have to say this, Joe, Dick was a lovely family man, and Finian's mother was a lovely person. But we played a match in Dalymount Park, because it was the one district, Bribal and Mountjoy, for years. And Finian's mother would present the cup every year.
I remember as well. Thanks very much for your kind words, Paddy.
That funeral at the time would remind you of President Kennedy's funeral. Your mother was all dressed in black, and you were all very young at the graveside. Unusual thing, and there was thousands lined on Connell Street, Westmoreland Street, for that funeral. It was unheard of for the guard to be shot, that particular time.
And you're thinking, when you see, I know the exact image you're thinking of, Paddy, the at the graveside at the JFK funeral in 63, you would have had Caroline and John Jr. around the same age.
They were all dressed in black. It was a beautiful photograph. Now, you can't say it was a beautiful photograph at the funeral, I suppose, but it would remind you very much of JFK's funeral.
Okay, well, it was a big event here. It was a major event here, as you know. Finian, there you've got the support of the retired Gardaí from that part of the city, so that's for your plaque. I don't know where you go next. I don't know who you said the organisation who owned the building is called what? New Nation,
I believe. Yeah.
And what do they do?
I'm not sure. They might be some sort of computer or IT organisation.
Okay, well, I'm sure there's somebody there. Maybe someone who works in New Nation. It doesn't it doesn't take away from the building. It adds to the story of that of our. It's adds to the history of our nation.
Finian should be very proud of his father. Like he was a hard worker and would have worked long hours to rear those kids, you know. And I'm kind of at the 70s when the pay in the guards was very bad, because we just got this Conroy Commission to get better pay.
Remember the Conroy?
And that would
have been
the first weekend he was actually off for a whole long weekend.
Thanks very much.
That time you worked a whole month off night, you only got four nights off, and we got Conroy Commission. We got special hours then. Well, he was a great man.
You got semi-human hours, Paddy. Jesus.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It wasn't special.
Yeah.
You got semi-human hours. Nora Conroy is on the line. I presume no 51551. And Nora, you were a friend of Dick Fallon as well.
Hello, yes. Yeah. My husband was a great friend of Dick's. And when this happened, I'm ringing you today because I'm in tears here recalling it. The funeral and the little children and our mother.
Yeah.
And as they've called her before, you said it reminds you of John F. Kennedy's funeral. It was exactly the same. A young woman left, her husband going out to do a job. And I feel so sorry for the guards still this day.
Yeah.
And I often say when people are complaining about them, would you like to see your husband or your son going out and to think that you'd never see them again?
And Nora, were you aware that Richard Fallon's widow had died? Well,
yeah, I just heard it there.
Very young, and the one of the reports at the time was that she died of a broken heart, as repeated by Phil.
Oh, she would have. Yeah. And I, as a mother and a grandmother and a great grandmother, I am.
Mm.
My heart goes out to her son there, and I think of him, and I still see him not as a man, but as a little boy.
Okay. Thanks very much, Nora. You're very kind.
And Finian also told us, Nora, that two of his, well,
brothers,
very young brothers in their 40s, died prematurely, obviously. So,
yes.
So we're conscious of that as well.
Oh, I am. But yeah. I go back to the day that it happened and the funeral, and I'm here on my own, and I too am a widow, and my husband died, and I was only 33. And
God.
I had to rear my children.
What
so
happened?
I can identify.
And was your husband a guard?
No,
oh,
he
just
wasn't.
A friend, okay.
No, but he was very friendly with all the guards in Harker Terrace.
And what age was he when he died, Nora?
He was 50.
God, okay.
A massive heart attack.
Yeah.
And Vivian can be very, very proud of his father because his father was one of those, what I call a true guard. He was fearless.
Okay.
And he'd take on anyone. And he reminded me of the same as the little guard of Brannigan years ago.
Oaks Brannigan, yeah.
Yeah. And the guards at that time were like that. They went out and did their job. The guards, they had very little support, low wages. They hadn't any transport or anything, the same as the guards have today. But I'm ringing mortally.
Yeah, and that's heard, Nora, that your condolence and your memory of the funeral and that
and
point about
I have
young
still
children.
His father's memorial card here.
Okay.
And
thanks very much, Nora.
And I just tell you, just if your father was an out and out gentleman.
Okay.
And your mother
Nora.
A lady.
Okay.
Thank you.
And she did so well to do the best she could for you, Anders, and she did die of a broken heart because I know how attached they were to one another and their family.
Okay.
They lived for their family and for each other.
Well said, Nora, and well remembered.
Thanks, Nora.
I won't hold you up, as a mother, my heart goes out to you.
Well, if there is, Nora, if there is going to be a ceremony in a commemoration in April for the 50th anniversary of the murder of Garda Richard Fallon, we'll announce it on the programme and we'll announce what the family want to do if that is to happen.
Yes,
Nora Conroy, thanks indeed. Dr. Finian Fallon, thanks indeed. And again, condolences on, I extend that to the other bereavements within your family. Paddy Daly, thanks for those kind words to Finian about his father. Dr. Aidan Hampson, who started this all by your phone call
Thank
at
you.
A quarter to two saying about the plaque that's not gone missing but has been removed to a private area in Clontarf Garda Station. It just shows you, on the one hand, thankfully, on the other hand, tragically, how the death of a Gardaí in the course of their duty in this country really, really impacts on Irish people, such as the general affection that people have for the Gardaí going back, nearly 100 years now. Aidan Hampson, thanks.
Joe, can I just say something for a minute?
Yeah, of course you can, yeah.
Joe, my initial mission talking to you was to try and get that plaque restored to its rightful place. And hopefully the powers that be will listen to his widow Vera and her wishes.
Okay.
I think that's very important.
And as we know,
and would you ask George if George is still there? If I have upset Vera by bringing up this, I apologise profusely.
Not at all. I think he was. I think from what George was saying, Vera, his wife, was happy to talk to him about it. She's unable to talk because of a number of strokes, but she was happy to talk to him and to communicate that she would much prefer if the plaque would be put back on public display. Okay, Aidan Hampson, Nora Connery, Finian Fallon and Paddy Daly. I'm tweeting a photograph of the plaque that's visible in Mountjoy Garda Station for Garda Richard Fallon. That's on at Joe Liveline or at RTE Liveline. 51551 joe@rte.ie.